Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Moneybox Financials Limited Q2 and H1 FY24 earnings conference call hosted by Ventura Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Tushar from Ventura Securities. Thank you, and over to you, Tushar.
Thank you. Good day, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Ventura Securities Limited, I welcome you all to Moneybox Financials Limited Q2 and H1 FY24 earnings conference call. Few of the statements in this call may look forward-looking in nature, which are subject to several risks and uncertainties, and actual results could differ from such forward-looking statements. The company is represented by Mr. Deepak Agarwal, Co-founder, Co-CEO, and CFO, along with Mr. Mayur Modi, Co-founder, Co-CEO, and COO of the company. I would now like to hand over the call to Mr. Deepak Agarwal for opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tushar. Hi, everyone. This is Deepak Agarwal, Executive Director of the company. And just for the interest of everyone, I believe I will just give 10 minutes of background about the company, and post that we can have a Q&A session. So basically, to give you first the industry overview, see, basically, there are about 250 corporates or NBFC which are MFI. So wherein you have loan ticket size up to 50,000 largely, and the loans are given in groups of like 8 to 10 women groups which are made. So typically, that is a 3 lakh crore industry and running for the last two decades. Now, where we are is we start at loan ticket size from 50,000 and go up to 10 lakh. So what has been happening historically in, say, last two decades, although MFI is gaining the presence, but there has always been a paucity of getting a loan which is of higher amount and for the individual-level customer, say, any amount which ranges from 75,000 to 3 lakh in unsecured category or, say, 2 lakh to 10 lakh in secured category. The problem which is faced by a customer of this segment is especially the area where we serve, which is like tier 3 and below, rural, semi-rural, semi-urban kind of area. You have lack of GST. You don't have ITR. The banking is not adequate to sanction the loan. So what happens for these kinds of customers? Neither banks are able to serve nor the typical fintech because fintech also works on these three things. So over the past.
तुम्ही त्या व्यक्तीशी बोलत आहात, त्याने तुमच्या कॉलला.
Hello?
Sorry, sir, please go ahead.
So yeah, so what has been happening in the last 7 to 8 years, and which I think most of the investors realized, is that there is a significant supply gap in this particular loan segment, which is 50,000 to 10 lakh. So wherein Moneybox comes in, you have larger players like Five Star Finance, Veritas, Vistaar in the south for this space. You have a smaller player like Servgram in Gujarat and Maharashtra, and Finova and I in the north side. So this is a typical peer set where we operate in. And so in terms of product, what we do is we do 70,000 to 3 lakh kind of unsecured ticket size and 2 lakh to 10 lakh of secured ticket size. And tenor varies from 2 years in case of unsecured, 2 to 3 years, and 4 to 7 years in case of secured. Typically, the key areas where we cater to is dairy, which is so unlike many players who have cluster-based approach, in Moneybox, we follow an essential-based approach. So wherever we are lending, we see that these are the essential segments of the industry, and which protects us from, you know, credit cycle. So we have dairy, which is over 60% of my portfolio. When we say dairy, it's a livestock customer, any customer who is having 5+ cattle, plus an agri farm, and plus some other income. So minimum 2 income are required. So how we define it as, it's a dairy is a food item, so it's essential. Then next is a kirana segment, which is about 10% of my portfolio. So normal mom and pop shop in the rural and semi-urban areas, in semi-rural areas. And then we have other retailers like chemists, like ready-made garments, cloth, electrical hardware. So all routine items, followed by some retailers like, you know, which we classify as manufacturers, like sheet metal fabrication, furniture, and a very small portfolio of about 2-3% in services like eateries, etc. So typically what we are saying is that we have 2 products, secure and unsecured, in these 4-5 segments, which are essential in nature. So we are not like, you know, we'll not do like a lock manufacturer in Aligarh or a shoe manufacturing in Agra. So we don't have a cluster-based approach. The other part is, as I said, that it's a largely a rural and semi-rural, semi-urban kind of portfolio. We have a branch-led model, although it's a 100% digital processes. So not even any single paper document is taken from the borrower. 100% of the assessment is done on the B2B app. So that is the one thing in terms of how we differentiate, you know, from PS significantly is that our asset quality is among the best in the industry. So just to give you a couple of examples, during the COVID one wherein there was a moratorium, we still had 96% collection. The same thing happened with COVID 2 when there was no moratorium. And since inception, our collection has never dipped below, 98%, except for one or two months in COVID. So what is there is that asset quality in the lending business is very, very important. And this continuous control in asset quality has led to, you know, we having funding from almost 33 marquee lenders. Which today includes 8 banks and some of the most conservative banks, whether it is State Bank of India, HDFC, Federal, IDFC, we have AU Small Finance Bank, and very recently sanctioned, got a sanction from Kotak as well. So there is a direct proof of, you know, this asset quality and processes, which is where, you know, we are at a very early stage, supported by the most conservative lenders. Even in NBFC, we have Tata Capital, etc. So that's the yield in the business is quite good. So you would see in the presentation that we are operating at a 30% yield. Yield is a little higher at 32% in unsecured and around 24-25% in secured business. The spreads are high at around 15-16%. NIMs are very high at 17-18%. The liquidity is very strong in terms of, one is obviously the funding from in the form of debt, term loans from banks. And in addition to that, we have 45 crore per month of co-lending and business correspondence lines, which ensure that, you know, we are never short of liquidity. So that is one thing which, these co-lending lines are from Vivritti, Mass, and Utkarsh. And this is, again, a result of very, very, very strong process-oriented, you know, culture which we have. Beyond that, as I said that, you know, on tech, we are very heavy. So there is a B2B app, which is there for assessment. And then there is a customer-facing app wherein, you know, he can see his statements, he can make some savings through in digital gold, he can, you know, do insurance, he can, you know, actually get reward points for referring clients, He can apply for top-up loans. So there are a lot of things, you know, which you can do on the customer-facing app, which is available online on the App Store. What else? The other thing which is in terms of strategy which is working is that earlier we were only into unsecured loans. From last 1 year, you know, as our cost of borrowing has started, you know, declining, and canals from the lenders, you know, we are getting larger canals. So we started the secured lending as well. And this is, gaining a lot of traction, where we disbursed only 6% of the incremental disbursement were in, secured in Q4 of last year. The last quarter has about 22% of the portfolio which was secured in terms of disbursement. Although outstanding portfolio, it is 13% into the secured. So this secured thing will ensure that, you know, our book stays longer in the books, because of the larger tenor which we have. In terms of, geographic presence, we are in 7 states. This is for a company which is, kind of 4.5 year old. It's a very, very strong geographic diversification with no state having over 26% of the AUM. So we are present in Rajasthan, Haryana, Punjab, UP, MP, Chhattisgarh, Bihar, and very soon starting with Gujarat. So generally you will see that our larger, even our larger players like Five Star, Veritas, they are like, 85% of portfolio in 3 states. Or Finova or Servgram. So everyone has the same story other than I. The result is that, you have relatively higher OPEX in the beginning, but it starts declining over a period of time. And, extension becomes faster as you grow. Now we have a target of about 800 crores AUM for March this financial year, and double it to 1600 by next year. So although we are like a conservative company, but I think the growth is reasonable. The ROE will be double digit very soon, despite having played very low on equity since inception. The biggest news which I would like to share is that we have got a confirmed commitment of over 75 crores in this private placement round which we are doing. The money will be in by, 15th of December. And as you see the Q2 numbers, where we have a net worth of 85 crores, with 75 crore fund infusion and, a ballpark of 10 crore additional profit, which will come, additionally in this year, we are actually doubling our net worth by March. More than doubling, because there is a 5 crore which needs to come from promoters as well. Warrants are already issued. So that's the, in last 4.5 years, this is the largest expansion of net worth, I would say. So which is like 100% growth in the net worth in next 4 to 5 month period, but largely by December. I think this broadly covers the key points. The only other thing which is kind of very differentiated with our model is that how we are trying to build is that, other than a normal business, which is where you keep governance, transparency, all these issues, acts as a hygiene factor. We are trying to give something extra to our borrowers. Say, for example, when we say we have a 65% portfolio in cattle, we are the only NBFC in India which hires vet. Vet doctors on our payrolls, and services like treatments, vaccination, artificial insemination, guidance on nutrition, guidance on insurance, all these comes free of cost to the borrower. So for us, the cost may not be very, very extreme, but in terms of saving for borrowers, it's very high. So that's one thing which we do, which is very differentiated and, you know, really appreciated by the customer. The other thing is, as I said, that, you know, for all the livestock borrowers, they need to have a farm income as well, because that's how we calculate the unit economics, you know, and the business economics for this guy. We also, through CSR partnerships, distribute about 50 fruit-bearing trees per acre to the farmers. So these are, you know, supported by CSR initiatives, like, you know, very recently Dell did it, before that Parley Agro did it. And we are coming up with more such initiatives very soon. So that's one way, you know, to, you know, give a customer something extra, you know, wherein, you know, he starts thinking that, you know, if there are two lenders at the same pricing, he will rather, you know, go with us, because these are the additional benefits which he gets. So these are a brief guideline on, you know, where we are. Happy to take it forward from now. Tushar?
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, sure. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star and 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your turn to ask the question. If you would like to withdraw your request, you may do so by pressing star and 1 again. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any question, please press star and 1 on your telephone keypad. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question comes from Sahil Sharma, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Congratulations for good numbers, sir. I wanted to understand that for increasing our AUM from the current size to, you said, 800 crore by March 24 and then 1600 by March 25, what kind of strategy would we follow in terms of the geographical expansion?
Thank you, Sahil. So, Sahil, as we noticed that since inception, we have been continuously increasing our presence in states as well as the branches. So that has been the strategy. So now we are, today we are, just 1 second, Sahil, just 1 second. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, so we are in 7 states as of now, and starting Gujarat. So Bihar we very recently added, and Gujarat we are starting from December. So we will have 8 states and about 100 branches by March. And next year we will enter 3 states of South, which is Karnataka, Telangana and Tamil Nadu. So that is on cards. And in the meanwhile, we will enter other states as well, you know, starting with the borders. So that's the strategy. One, that expansion in states, the other is the expansion in branches. So at least we have one proven model in terms of the existing business, you know, where we know this much we can grow. And that is the only thing which we have accounted for in the current business plan. So other than that, so one is lease expansion, which is geographical expansion, and the branch expansion. Then the third thing will come is that, and then you take other approaches to grow AUM, which is for this year, as you said, that, you know, till last year, we were more focused on unsecured lending and getting the co-lending partnerships in place. For this year, the biggest agenda is to increase focus on the secured loan, which comes with larger ticket size and larger tenor to increase the AUM. So next year, you know, while these initiatives will continue, we will also explore some other areas, that, you know, today we only do business loans, So if we can do, you know, similar loans to salaried government employees in the same sector, in the same areas, or, you know, we can enter new products, which could be like a cross-sell opportunity. Say, for example, all our customers have, you know, bikes. So is there some scope there to do that business? Or if there is some scope to do commercial leasing, you know, like, you know, some specialized stuff which we can do. So, you know, we keep on exploring all that stuff to grow the EM. But, you know, yes, having said that, there is a product which is already developed, you know, which has shown a good execution over 80 branches now, so which will continue to grow.
Thank you, sir. My next question is that given the pace of growth, it is good that we are already profitable, but do you have some rough estimate for, you know, by when we can achieve 15% ROE?
Okay. So that is not far, but what we are 100% sure is that even in the current year, we will have a double-digit ROE. I will not be surprised if by March, as in on the analyzed number, because what we see is that we have now got a reasonable commitment in terms of equity. There will be no surprise if we are able to achieve that number somewhere by March itself. Maybe, you know, 100, 200 basis point here and there. But for sure, by next financial year, we should have more than 15% ROE. Maybe more like, you know, late teens to 20%.
Thank you, sir. I'll come back in the queue.
Okay.
Thank you. Next question comes from Bama Dutta, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for giving me the opportunity to actually ask you. And my question is, like, what is the average break-even period for the new branch that is being set up to becoming profitable?
In terms of months, it would be around 6 months. In terms of months, it takes about 6 months, Bama. And in terms of AUM, it is anywhere close to 2 to 2.5 crore of AUM. So more likely, I would say take 2.5 crores of AUM for branch to become, you know, 2 to 2.5 crore kind of AUM to break even.
Okay, and historically, how this data been improved? I mean, are you seeing any improvement on this break-even period? I mean, when you started, or maybe in the mid, maybe 2-3 years back, and now that improvement, are you seeing that, or is it like average? It is similar.
It's average is similar, because, you know, some branches where you have a very good branch officer, you may have break-even in 4 months, but then you know there will be some branches which will go to 6 months. So on an average, does not make much difference, yeah. And also because, you know, at least for the time being, you know, all the branches, the late branches after 64 branches which we have opened, they are only doing secured business. So maybe that's again a shift kind of thing. So more or less we are there only. But yes, as I said that, you know, 40 out of 80 branches we have now, 40 are... you know, less than 1 year old. So they are still not profitable, but with 40 profitable branches and with a low equity base, we are still, you know, making about, you know, 8-odd% ROE, which is despite the bonus given in this quarter. So next quarter it will even improve. So we are seeing the improvement, there, but I think, these are initial pains when you grow a branch base at a much higher number. But over a period of time, you know, when I have say 300 branches, it is not possible to open 200 branches next year. So that percentage of new branches will reduce over a period of time.
Okay, thank you. My next question is like, compared to the last quarter, I mean, if we see... interest income has been increased roughly about 20%, but employee attribution cost and finance cost has been increased like that about 45 to 50%. So what actually attributed it?
So in terms of employee base, as I said, the larger part is because of the bonus. So this quarter has some bonus hit. So we are dividing our bonus into Q2 and Q3. So this quarter, if you compare with the Q1, the employee expense look higher, but it is because of the bonus part. Right. Otherwise it would not happen. But also at the same time, you know, there's a lot of expansion which has happened. There is a 20 increase in branches by, 20, the number is. So we were like 61 branches and September, and we were 79 branches. So expenses also increased. But had there been no bonus impact, the impact would not be that higher. I think finance cost is fine. That is the same 19% increase, because there is no equity raise per se in that quarter. So increase in finance cost is just normal, in line with the overall income growth. So if you will see that income from operation has grew by 21% and finance cost grew by 19%. So it's broadly there.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next question comes from Deepanshu Suman from Riddhi Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good evening. Congratulations on the good result. I wanted to understand a few data points. What would be the total customer count as of now on books?
So in terms of unique accounts, it's 37,000.
It's 37,452 to be precise. Yeah.
Okay. And what is the kind of repeat customer what we are having? So how many customers as of now would have taken, say, a double or a third time loan from you?
I can take that, Deepak, if you want.
Yeah, please, sure.
So as a percentage of AUM, that number is today 27.1%, which are repeat customers.
Okay. So, got it, sir. What is this fee income, sir? Like you have recorded about 2.4 crores of fee income. So, what are the components of the fee income?
So, it largely comes from, we do BC, it's a business correspondence. So, here what we do, we build a book for a third party, like the Utkarsh Bank. So, although all the underwriting methods we apply, but the funding is done by Utkarsh. So, say for example, we have a yield of say 30% on a loan, while Utkarsh charges 13%. So the 17%, which is the monthly differential interest rate, which we get, is the major part of that fee income is this income, which I said, the BC business, which we do. The second part is obviously that, whenever you do a loan, say the loan is priced at 30%, which means that 28% is the rate of interest, and say 2.5% is the processing fee. So there's that component of processing fees which is included in the fee income.
Okay, so do you guys also charge on the VAT visit, etc.? So those components also go or?
No. Those services are complementary.
So just to kind of clarify, out of the 2.44 crore fee income that we have booked, almost 1.69 crore is from the BC fee that we receive from the BC partner.
Okay, got it.
And then there are like some prepayment charges, some bouncing charges, that we receive. So that constitute a very small portion. And then there is a login fee for secured cases. So that together would typically be 2.44 crores, but a very large portion of that is the BC fees that we receive from the BC partner.
Okay. So, sir, what is the cost of, say, and the money what you are borrowing from banks, at what yield are you getting on these money, and how has been the trend over the last, say, 2-3 quarters?
So, what happens is that with banks, so for example, we got a full IRR of 11.5% from SBI, so which includes PF. HDFC gave at the same 11.5%, including PF. Kotak is 12%. Just to give you an example, DCB is 12.65. So what is happening now all the loans which are coming from banks, and more we are taking from banks, are coming at an average rate of 12%. And NBFCs is around 13.25%. And this has declined over a period of time. So like, definitely Q1, nothing was coming less than 14. But in Q2, everything is coming less than 14. And the highest rate we actually paid in Q2 to, so we also paid 14%, but otherwise it's like 13.25, 12.65. And now our benchmark is that we will not take anything which is more than 13%. So maybe 13%. NCD of private, public NCD could be a little different thing where we can go to 13.5 as well because there's a marketing cost there. But as a system, we have decided that we will not take anything which is more than 13% from NBFC and maybe 12.5% from bank. So that's the kind of, broad trend which we are seeing. And so continuously as rating improves, this cost will come down over a period of time.
Got it, sir. So this improvement in the borrowing cost, so is it translating onto your NIM, or are you also thinking to say give some interest reduction to your borrowers? How are you thinking about this thing over say next 3-4 quarters?
We are not thinking of any reduction per se. So in fact, we have in terms of unsecured loan, we have only increased the rate. But yes, what we have done is that we have secured loan which is priced significantly lower than the unsecured loan. So as month on month, as the AUM of secured loan increases, there would be slight dip on the yield side, but similarly there will be reduction on the borrowing side.
Got it, sir. So on the asset quality, so the last question what I had on the asset quality, so if we see over say last half year, say this March to September, there has been a slight increase in both your gross NPA and net NPA, as well as the PAR has also went up. So what is contributing onto this, and how should we see this over say by the end of March?
So, if you see, overall credit cost has not gone up, significantly, as you said. It's in the ballpark range of 1.5%. Sometimes GNPA may look a little higher, sometimes a little lower. But then overall, in terms of, write-off and ECL, it's about 1.5% per year. What we have done is, on a going concern basis for future, what we have assumed in the business plan that we will have a total 2% kind of credit cost, which can be there. And we believe this will be maintained, especially in the rising scenario where secured loans are increasing. So ideally, it could be like a 1.5 to 2% credit cost is unsecured and maybe 1% odd in secured. So broadly, we should be there. 1.5-2% range.
Okay, so in the model we are building up about 1.5 to 2% kind of say. Okay.
In the model, yes, in the model we have built 2%. I mean, going forward from next year onwards, just because the scale is increasing, so we have built up about 2% odd credit cost overall.
Okay, thank you, sir. I will come back in the queue.
Sure.
Thank you. Next question comes from Nizar Ora, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Congratulations on a good set of numbers and the fundraise. As we continue to quickly grow and ramp up our AUM, what are the strategies that we have in place to ensure that the collection efficiency continues to be as good as it is right now?
Okay. So basically strategy, there is no such significant change. I think the way we are working in terms of that the guy who disburses the loan is responsible for the collection as well. So all his incentives for the loan relationship manager, for LRM, for the branch head, or for the credit, maybe the BC, the branch credit officer and the central credit officer, everyone gets his incentive wherever applicable or the appraisal wherever applicable, especially based on the collection or the delinquency. So I think overall the interests are aligned that, you know, if you know, people will get benefit if there is a low delinquency. So obviously, you know, there are, you know, various metrics, you know, in terms of credit policy, which we use to ensure that delinquency is minimal. We relatively have a stricter norm, but as a matter of policy, you know, we have ensured that quality remains good. But at the end, as I said, that, you know, as the AUM, you know, increases significantly, you can't be just doing unsecured loan. So, and when you do secured, automatically delinquency becomes less. Maybe if it is 2% to 3%, even on the industry side, if it is 3% in unsecured, it will be like, you know, 1% in secured. So you automatically get that controlled.
Right. Thank you for that. And I wanted to understand that what has been the impact so far on our business of the rising interest rates and tighter liquidity, like all over the world. Does that affect our growth and everything?
Mayur, you want to take this up?
Sorry, the question about the impact of rising interest rates and low liquidity?
Yes,
right.
See, rising interest rates, you know, whilst, you know, other people have been impacted, but fortunately, because of the fact that we were a relatively smaller unit, we were borrowing any which way at a relatively higher cost. In fact, if you look at our borrowing cost, it has actually starting to come down with the scale and, you know, with the proven model, business model, and people getting more confidence in the business model, and lenders are continuing to kind of, you know, bring the rates down. We have been aggressively negotiating to bring the borrowing rates down, which we have been able to do in spite of the fact that the interest rates as a cycle has gone up. Liquidity, as Deepak had mentioned earlier, that one is balance sheet liquidity, which we mentioned that, you know, there is a very high confidence of the lenders in kind of, you know, in associating with us. There are already 30 lenders who provide us liquidity from time to time on the balance sheet side. There are people who have come in with 2 cycles, 3 cycles, and even 4 cycles, fourth round of liquidity since they started. Plus, additionally, what we have done is we have, brokered very good co-lending partnerships where we have on-tap liquidity of 50 crores. So just to give you a perspective, we are kind of disbursing roughly in the range of 50 to 60 crores month on month. So even if there was no balance sheet liquidity available, we could do that with the on-tap liquidity with the co-lending partners and the BC partnerships. So I don't think the liquidity is really a concern, at least the way we growing and the way the liquidity is building up in the system for us.
Right. And sir, my last question is that we have been openly talking about our model and strategy, like our non-cluster-based approach and everything. So first thing is how difficult it is for others to, you know, simply replicate this if this is so successful. And the second thing is, like, are there any thing, like, is there something in place in our underwriting process, like some data thing or something that gives us, you know, eventually keeps on building our competitive advantage and keeps the customer with us?
Yeah, I think, yes, you know, we've been open about it because of the fact that we believe that, you know, no matter what model you adopt, I think the execution is the key. And I think we have a very fantastic team both on the ground and in the management, on the middle management side, with great experience in terms of handling this kind of a business. So I think the execution has been top-notch, where there are certain principles that we have not deviated, whether it is in terms of underwriting, whether in terms of sourcing. So let's see. So if I tell you today that in our funnel, in terms of lead generation to actual disbursement is only 13 to 14%, which is the lowest in the industry. So if there are 100 leads generated, the ultimate funding is only happening to 13 to 15% of that 100 leads, which one shows that, you know, we have been very, very selective with the way we underwrite. Two, there is enough demand to do that. You know, even in spite of rejecting 85% of the leads, we are still able to grow at a very healthy rate. Two, we have been using proprietary underwriting models. because of the fact that we have now an experience of 4 to 5 years, plus 2 years of COVID has really kind of tested our model, and we have kind of tweaked that. So there is a lot of proprietary information in terms of geographical geography, the segmentation, the behavior, customer behavior through different credit life cycles. That has all got built in into the model, and it is getting refined by the day. So as we move forward, I think we do have a competitive advantage in terms of understanding the segment better, and execution is top notch.
Got it, sir. Thank you. I'll get back in.
Thank you. I request the participants to restrict with 2 questions in the initial round and join back the queue for more questions. Next question comes from Rajesh Kumar, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Congratulations for the progress that the company is making. I have 2 questions. First is, we have a firm capital raising commitment of 75 crores for Q3. So, and we have a target of 6485 plus crores AUM for financial year 2028. So my question is, how much more share equity capital is required to reach this AUM?
So, okay, so this is basically, to answer questions, there are 2 things. One is that, covenants allow us, to do, for every 100 crores, I will answer this in multiple steps. So as per the covenants from the lender, for every 100 crore of equity, we can do about 750 crore in AUM. So that's one math. The second thing is, ideally, we would like to have, like, for every 100 crore of equity, we would like to have about 500 crore of AUM. So it's like 1:4. So that decent ROA and decent ROE can be maintained. The third thing is, as you said, that for 685, generally the expectation would be that, you would need about, say 1500 crores of equity. That's definitely a choice how much you want to raise. But there is a profitability which is there. I would say, from here on, after the 75 crore raise, we will be sitting on a 175 crore net worth. So maybe we could raise another, 700, 800 crore more to reach that kind of AUM. I would assume that, we would raise another 800 crore in next 4.5 years.
Okay, sir. Thanks for the clarification. And second question is regarding the opportunity size in the segment that we are addressing. Per year, how much is the opportunity size in the country, in the unsecured segment and the secured segment separately that we are addressing? Can you give that? That is the second final.
Generally, if you see, there are various reports, the latest being the CRISIL report, which analyzed that, this 1 to 10 lakh segment is 22 lakh crore, wherein the size currently in the organized sector is only 2 lakh crore. So based on that, if you see, the opportunity is as large as 20 lakh crores, which is like, 20 trillion, So that's large the opportunity is. Having said that, what we believe is that even when you see the current size, just the livestock is about 7% of GDP, which is 15 lakh crore. So, whatever business we want to do, there is, the opportunity is very, very large. Even if you take the existing space which is available. But this is very, very large. Very, very large. I'm saying all the segment where we are in, like just livestock is 15 lakh crore. Kirana is close to double of that. Otherwise retail is very, very large. So market size is very, very large. It depends on that. You have a right product and maybe a little differentiated product. Maybe I'm not saying that something which is very, 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 very different or revolutionary. But the way lending landscape is, even if you can differentiate a little bit, versus your other options which players have, you can have a good sale. good growth.
Great. So just to add to this, this is a maximum 10-player market as far as US is there. So can we aim to reach up to 5% of the market share to reach saturation before reaching saturation?
You really don't go that way because see, that's kind of that's a reasonable number, but you know it takes time. I would say you know depends on the horizon you have. So I mean you have seen
two decades itself I am considering. That's what I am asking.
Yes. So I mean everyone you know for us we definitely like to be 1 lakh crore in 2 decades. And there are you know when players are growing like AU, they have done like you know in 10 years from 350 crore to 35,000 crore. And then 55,000 crore in next 2 years. So, I mean, people have grown that way. It's just that you have to continuously expand on the segments where you cater to, your geographical representation, and maybe at some point in time, you know, even open for inorganic growth.
Okay, great, sir. So, are you confident that even in a COVID kind of scenario arising again, are you able to ensure that you will be able to collect 96% again with this business model? Are you confident?
It should be. You know, how do I say that? I mean, that is what we have shown that you know that the track record has been you know better than the industry, and very solid in itself.
Yes. Sir, I am a long-term investor invested in this company for the next decade. Thanks, sir. All the best for the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. Next question comes from Mana Rao, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Hi, good evening. So, my question was, our net NPA, you know, as a percentage of AUM has almost doubled, you know, whereas our provision cost is just the same or decreased on a quarter-on-quarter basis. So, can we just have your thoughts on this? And on a long-term basis, you know, what kind of GNPA and net NPA numbers are we comfortable with? 2% credit cost is what you said, but on these numbers, if you can also clarify. Yeah.
Yeah, so I believe you will see the numbers to be like, you know, GNPA less than 1% around. It's not that, you know, if you see the write-offs in Q2 of last year, it was 1.73%. This is just 0.88 this time. So I'm saying that, you know, maybe write-off in this quarter has been relatively lower than the historical number. But overall, if the write-off were at the same level, you would have GNPA at a lesser rate. And NNPA is also getting impacted by because there's a co-lending business which is involved now. And there is a little different accounting norms which are followed there. So it's more regular way of money which is going to the business partner. So there is some sort of impact. But really, if you ask me, it's not the case that, you know, credit costs have significantly increased over a period of time.
Yeah. So I think
so
yeah,
you can
I
assume that. So Manhar, it will be what? Like safe to assume that we will remain in that, you know, 1.5 to 2% range. As I said that, you know, there are even, you know, secured business which is increasing. But at the same time, I feel that if it, when you're, you know, working on a 30% yield portfolio, 2% is just reasonable number to have, you know, that kind of credit cost.
Okay. Yeah, my second and last question was, what is going to be, you know, our growth lever on the existing, you know, the matured branches, you know, the ones which have, you know, 10 to 12 crore of AUM? I mean, is the growth lever in them going to be because of we increasing the size of the branch or we moving from unsecured to secured? Because on a long-term basis, on an 8,000 crore AUM, we are facing an average of 16 crore AUM per branch. So are we going to grow the, you know, matured branch by what is going to be the lever? Yeah, that's the question.
Yeah, so one is definitely you know, secure definitely improves the longevity of customers. So the same customer, when it is secured, you know, it stays with you for 5 years versus it's 2 years in unsecured loan. So that definitely helps. Repeat customer definitely helps. You know, we have very, very high percentage in repeat business. So that helps. And then when the customer grows, your ticket size grows. You know, every next time you give him a higher loan, that helps. And then you can definitely see the other needs he has. So for example, can we also give him a bike loan in future? Can we also cater to some of the other needs of the customer? Say in terms of, today we don't give home renovation. Can we also enter into home renovation? So there could be, you know, different sets even with the existing customer base where you can grow. And at the same time, we don't feel that it could be a 50 crore branch for our business. So, you know, there are branches which are now reaching 17, 18, even 20 crores for this year. So it, even if the branch stays at 20 crore AUM, it's a good number to be in. So we have seen branches at 11, 12 crores making 10%, you know, PBT margin, which is a great number. So I would not be unhappy with the 20 crore kind of, you know, branch.
Yeah, one last accounting question. In the investor presentation, page number 8, we have mentioned like 99 crores of equity, right? But in the BSE filing, it's totaling up to 85 crores. So what is this difference of 15 crores coming?
The difference is the loss which we have done. The loss which has happened in the initial years. So the 99 crore shows the total amount of equity which we have raised. But the 85 crore is a net worth because there has been a loss of 6. So before we got profitable in the last quarter of last year, we incurred 16.6 crore of loss. So that's okay. What explains the difference.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from Shahil Sharma, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
I was just wondering in terms of the borrowers which we have, can you maybe help us understand in terms of their ability to pay back? Like typically what might be their annual incomes or, you know, that basically trying to understand the financial strength of the borrowers in terms of the way we model them.
So, Sahil, generally the conceptually how we start is that a customer, when we are giving him loan, should have a minimum income of 25,000 per month. So, I give you an example. When we do cattle loan, we say that minimum number of cattle he should have is 5, and say 5,000 is the income which we assume, per month for a customer. So, that is 25,000 per month. Plus, he needs to have an agri farm, you know, which will give him some income, maybe 50,000 or 1 lakh per annum, but it will be irregular income, not like a monthly income. So that's the starting point we have. Whether we do Kirana, whether we do any other thing, that he should have a income of 25,000 per month, and wherein we can give him...
It's disposable income, yeah.
Yeah, to some extent, is yes, disposable income, because, you know, as I said, that 5 cattle plus a farm. So, you know, another 1 lakh he will make there, which will, you know, over a period of time, 25,000 becomes disposable. But then, yes, even to give a, you know, just to take, if I want to give him 1 lakh, wherein the EMI will be about 5,300 rupees, he needs to have a minimum disposable income towards that 15% coin. So maybe 11,000 rupees is what he should have a net balance. So that's why I'm saying that, it's above MFI, wherein we are saying that, you know, annual income of 3 lakhs plus. And then it depends, you know, I have customers who are making even 1 lakh per month, 50,000 per month, 70,000, 80,000 per month. I have customers in secure segment, you know, having 70 cattle. So it's like, you know, earning 1.5 lakh per month. So these are the kind of profiles, you know. Diversified profile which we have. So say anywhere between 25,000-30,000 monthly income to 1.5-2 lakh kind of monthly income.
Thank you so much, sir. That's all.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from Nizar Ora, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Sir, I wanted to ask that what are our economics on the co-lending side? And like in the future, we are increasing our focus on secured loans. So what percentage are we aiming that a secured loan should be of our portfolio?
So to give you an answer to your first question, it's the commercials are more or less same. You know, we take co-lending at the same rate at which we take term loans. So it's we earn equal amount of money. How it helps, co-lending helps is the on-tap liquidity. It's more of a liquidity play. So these days I'm securing term loan at 13%, co-lending is at 14%, but that should come down in a couple of months. So that's the answer to your question number one. The second in terms of secured, so I think incrementally we will increase. So, you know, as Mayur said that, you know, we are aiming for 20-25% this year, maybe 30-35% next year, 40-45% year next. So, but you know, we want to take majority portfolio into secured segment. Or maybe, you know, in next 5 to 6 years, maybe 75-80% of the portfolio into secured. It only depends on the cost of borrowing. So because, see, I don't want, for example, if I had a borrowing rate of 13-14%, I would not mind, like 100% of the portfolio to be secured. So incrementally, as my costs are reducing, I want to do more and more secured.
Right. And is it more difficult to get customers for secured loans? Because like I was talking to some employee from one of our competitors, and they were mentioning like transitioning from secured to unsecured is a difficult thing because secured customers are difficult to get. Is that the case?
Mayur, you want to take this up?
So there is some truth in that. Unsecured being unsecured. Obviously, the origination is much faster. Easier, and so are the risks. But yes, what we've been doing is, you know, we kind of read into some of the existing models in terms of, you know, how people are doing secured, what are some of the key things, you know, documentation becomes a key, collateral management becomes a key. So obviously there is a learning curve that happens within the system, and there is a lag, which happens in terms of origination. But what we have seen is the benefits far outweigh the small operational hiccups or the challenges that come with originating a secured portfolio. What we have also done is we have tried to build that intelligence within the existing teams itself instead of hiring new members in the team with a specialized focus, because then you kind of creating two different teams within the branch network, which we believe is not the optimum utilization of a resource. So we have spent a lot of time and energy in training the existing teams in terms of understanding the documentation, lay of the land, you know, the regulations and other aspects of securing or sourcing a secured, which took us a bit of time. You know, it took us 6 to 8 months to kind of, you know, come up to speed. But once the branches came up to speed in terms of sourcing secured, I think the transition becomes faster. Right, so there are various approaches that you can approach or apply, but we felt that, you know, training the existing teams in the long run is a much better bet than creating a completely new team for secured business.
Got it, sir. And sir, would you give any guidance on the cost of borrowing in the future? What are our plans for that?
So basically, you know, it depends on the time frame. Again, if you're talking about medium 2 to 3 year kind of work, I would say it should be in line with peers, which is in larger peers, which is around 10%.
Okay, got it. Right. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from Bama Datta, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so sir, you mentioned in fellow investor question that your criteria is having like for unsecured loan to cattle, like 5 minimum cattle to be there. And my question is like, what about the Kirana stores? I mean, what is the criteria for the Kirana stores you take? And second thing is that in second criteria, you mentioned like 25,000 per month is the income, actually that is the criteria. So my question is like, while most of the transactions are like in cash in those customers or lender, I mean, persons who is taking the lending. So how do you verify, I mean, that the 25K income, I mean, thinking that it is mostly like cash payment?
Right. So that is a good question. See, the part is that's where we are saying that, you know, these kinds of loans are possible because, see, you don't have income statement, IT returns, GST, nothing is there. So that's where importance of doing multiple loans in a single segment plays a role. So, you know, if you have done, say, you know, 20,000 loans in a cattle segment, you know, then you have an idea how much per cattle, particular breed, particular state, with particular land, how much a guy can earn. And, you know, similarly, it is for Kirana as well. You know, you have a method that, you know, 80-20, wherein you count the inventory and, you know, across multiple thousand, you know, players, you know that if there is this kind of size with this kinds of inventory, this kind of sale is possible with this kind of margin. So ballpark, you know, obviously you understand from the customer as well, but, you know, there is always a way that, you know, on a conservative level, that this will be the minimum income for the customer. So that's what is important in this kind of lending, that you understand the segment and based on that, develop your underwriting criteria. So sheet metal will have like, you know, so like sheet metal fabrication will have 20-25% of the margin. Kirana will have a specific margin. Dry cleaning will have a specific margin. Hair salon will have a specific margin. So as you do multiple cases in the same industry, you realize that, you know, how much a guy with, you know, one chair, two chairs, three chairs in a salon can earn in the kind of segment where we are doing our business. So that's what market intelligence is.
Just to add to what Deepak said, you know, so broadly speaking, you know, our underwriting principles are based on three C's, which is basically your cash flows, character, and, you know, collateral in case of secured. And, you know, what we have done over a period of last 4-5 years is that, you know, let's say we are taking out almost 250 data points from the customer when a loan officer is visiting the customer. All that he is doing is collecting these 250 data points, and all the raw data that we collect is getting transformed into a structured data at the back end to give us insights into his earnings, expenses, into his assets, what kind of liabilities he is running. You know, that gives us a very good view about his overall, you know, net worth, if I can say that. So that helps us kind of, you know, structure our underwriting in a way that, you know, we have now very specific region specific data points to say how a customer is going to behave in a particular segment in a particular region. So those kind of data insights are getting incorporated into underwriting models, and we are refining that almost on a daily basis. You know, so those, because of the fact that we have now funded more than 100,000 customers, you know, and it's a good data set to have. So we've been running back testing models in terms of understanding what was some of the mistakes that we did in our earlier underwriting. You know, what is it that we need to do better with this set of customers, given a specific event that happens in the life cycle of that customer. So you know, obviously because of the fact that formal data sources are not there in terms of information, obviously we rely on a lot of surrogate information, lot of information that we capture from the customer, lot of verification that we do in terms of where is he buying from, how much is he buying, you know, those kind of data points go into our underwriting model.
Thank you, sir. I mean, very nicely explained and well understood this point. Thank you.
I request the participants to restrict with one question in the initial round and join back the queue for more questions. Next question comes from Rajesh Kumar, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thanks for the opportunity again. My question is regarding the fee and commission income. Now, we have quarter-on-quarter growth of almost 100% in fee and commission income. I would like to know, is it 100% asset-light income, like which doesn't require equity, like coming from insurance product distribution?
No. This is, so I said, as I said, mentioned earlier, Rajesh, 2.44 crores that we have booked as other income. 1.69 is the fee income that we generated by doing the correspondent business for Utkarsh Bank. Right? So that's the elephant in terms of the distribution of the fee income. Obviously, there is an element of bouncing charges. They are prepayment roughly 1 to 2% of the AUM gets prepaid on a monthly basis. So that is something that we apply a certain prepayment charge. So that's something. Obviously, when a person is logging in a secured case, there is a login fee which is taken from the customer. So that is also a small part of the overall fee income.
Okay, got it, sir. And now it is around 10% of the overall income. So this ratio will continue to maintain, or will it improve that going forward?
This should be in this range, depending on how much is the correspondent business as a percentage of your total AUM. So that will define, because almost 70-80% of the income is coming from that source. So typically BC is today 10%, so that is what is getting reflected in your total fee income. So that is how it is. Today BC is 9.7% of the total AUM. BC business.
Thank you, sir. We have a follow-up question from Nizar Ora, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Sir, I wanted to ask that how and what kind of on-ground touch does the top-level management maintain?
I can say that the top team is always there on the ground. I think when you look at top team, it's not only me and Deepak, but the senior management, which consists of CRO, the operational heads, the training heads, and other departmental heads. So what we have done as a strategy is that, most of the guys travel for the first 10 days of the month, because there the business actually typically starts picking up after 10th. There are a lot of lock-ins that happen in the first 10 days, and then the business booking starts happening after 10. So a lot of credit team, the training team, and then other people from the corporate teams keep traveling on a daily, almost on a monthly basis by rotation. So that is something that happens. But yes, other than that, what we have is we also have other teams like the risk containment unit, which is spread across different branches, doing surprise audits, visits to understand what is happening on the ground. Plus, we have a very strong network of vet doctors who are employed by MoneyWorks as full-time employees. They are almost more than 30 employees. So these customers are regularly visiting all our cattle customers, understanding any problems that they have. That gives us a good view of what is happening on the ground. So there are multiple checks that happens with the customer at various levels.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the last question for the day. Now I hand over the floor to Mr. Deepak for closing comments.
Thank you. So with this, I would just like to thank everyone. You have taken a time to be on this festive season. So thanks a lot. Thanks Venture Security for conducting this call. And I wish everyone a very, very happy Diwali, happy and prosperous Diwali. And if there are any, any other points you want to ask, you want to get in touch, you can get in touch with AdFactors or, reach out to us through this. And I think I would say that, we would just want to continue doing what we do in terms of, because now the key product is very proven. And I believe in next 3 to 4, 5 years, we will cross like 5,000 to 6,000 crore kind of AUM with, as we said that, about 400 branches. So we feel we'll continue to grow, in a reasonably good pace, with good ROE numbers. So that's about it. Mayur, if you want to add anything.
No, I think, we are very excited in terms of what we are doing, and we feel very optimistic about the business model, the way it is shaping up. And, we will continue to grow profitably. And, I'm sure that as you all have seen that, asset quality remains a top focus. And I think that's the key to growing the lending business, obviously, and that we will continue to focus on asset quality as a top priority item. Thank you so much. And, I also wish all of you a very, very happy Diwali and a very prosperous new year for you all.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. Thank you for your participation, and you may all disconnect your lines now. Thank you and have a good day.